And since the last time you heard Phyllis, I think we finished all of the story of Dove and Bathsheba.
Okay.
We finished all the aftermath of Bathsheba and the rebellion of Absalom. So he came back to being king. We got the rebellion of Sheba ben Bichri, where he's going to split the kingdom between Yisrael and Yehuda, basically foreshadowing Sefer Melachim. We took a couple of months to just look at Tehillim and Hallel and all the different various prakim of Tehillim that make up the various kinds of Hallel that are in that. And then we came back, the last four prakim of Sefer Shmuel, which are not really part of the story. They're appendices. There's six different sections that don't really fit within the chronology. And once we figure out where they fit, and they're kind of added on the end, that gives us a different perspective on David and all everything else that's going on in Sefer Shmuel. And the first of those is the first 14 psukim of Shmuel Bet Perek Chaf Aleph. Tragic story. Starts, Vahi Ra'av Bimei David. There was a famine, assume it's a drought-related famine, in the days of David. Again, no particular time. Shalosh Shanim, for three straight years, Shana Achare Shana, 1 year after the next. Vavakesh David et Pnei Hashem. David sought the countenance of God. He looked for an answer. Why is this happening? I mean, if you got a famine that's happening in Tanakh, there must be a reason. You must be doing something wrong. These things don't just happen. Yomar Hashem, and Hashem tells David, El Sha'ul Vel Beit HaDamim. Go to look at Sha'ul and the House of Blood. Asher he meet at the Givonim. But he killed the Givonim. That's not a very helpful answer. What does David have to do with Sha'ul? And what is the Givonim? And when were they killed? The first, who are the Givonim? Now we have to go back to Yeshua. Right when Bnei Israel are coming into the land and they conquer Riho, they conquer Ai, and then we have this story here with the Givonim, one of the nations that lived in Canaan, one of the Canaanite nations. Yoshvei Givon, the Gibeonites, Shamu et Asher Asai Yeshua Yericho v'Ai. They heard what Yeshua had done to the city of Riho and Ai. Ve'esukam hema bo'arma. So what they did, they tried to fool Yeshua. They did some trickery. Ve'yelchu v'yad. And they went and they disguised themselves. They took out worn out sacks for the donkeys, and worn out wine sacks, and cracked and torn up. And they wore worn sandals and worn out clothing. Nikudim, I think that's where that's pronounced. And they've had dry, moldy bread with them. We know the story. So the Givonim, they got all this worn out clothes, and they go to Yeshua in the camp of Israel, that's in the city of Gilgal. They tell Yeshua and everybody else, the Eretz Rechol Kadbana, we have come from a faraway land. And therefore, we want to make peace with you and make a treaty with you. We're not one of those Canaanite nations that you're going to conquer. We're from far away. Let's have a treaty. So Yeshua made peace with them. And he promised that they would be at peace. Yeshua would not attack them. And all the leaders of the people swore to them, to the Givonim. And it was 3 days later, and they got the news. They loved that they found out that these were not actually from far away. They actually were Givonim from the next city over from Givon. And they were living amongst the other Canaanim. So they sent a delegation out to the Givonim cities on that third day, and they saw that their cities were Givon, Bakhtira, Beirot, Kiryat Yarim, they're all cities in Binyamin around Yerushalayim. Kiryat Yarim is the current Telstone. Lo Hikum Bnei Israel. Bnei Israel didn't attack them. Kinyishbulahem, because they swore to them, Kinyishbulahem to say, because the leaders had sworn to them, Bashem, the name of God, okay, Israel, right? They swore they make peace, because, and they, even though they were told, you have to conquer all of them, but they made a peace treaty, they weren't going to attack them. By Lona Kalidah and Nisim, so all the Jews complained to their leaders, because that's what Jews do. And the Nisim, the leaders, told the people, Israel, we swore that we would leave him in peace. We can't do anything about that. Yeah, they misled us, but still, we swore peace. We're not going to violate that oath. They call him Yeshua. So Yeshua calls the Gibonim. And told them, why did you trick us? That you're coming from such a faraway place. But you're right here. And the answer was, well, we were afraid of you. We didn't want you to conquer us. Still, Yeshua tells them, Now you are cursed. And you are now condemned. We will not kill you, we're going to attack you, but you will serve in the Beit Hashem. You will serve in the Mishkan. You will be the Chotvei Tzim v'Shovei Mayim. You will be the ones who, the hewers of wood and the drawers of water. Yassam came and they did that. And Yeshua saves them. The Bnei Yisrael were going to kill them all, but they said, no, you can't do that. We swear to vow that they're not going to attack them. We'll leave them alive. And so Yeshua set them out as hewers of wood and drawers of water, as it's translated, for the people, Mizbech Hashem, and for the Mizbech, Ariam Azeh, from then on, and Makoma Sheyavchar, for wherever Hashem would choose to have the Mishkan, the Beit Midash, that's what the Givonim would be. That was their job. And then they disappear, pretty much. We see nothing of them. The rest of Yeshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, maybe a little story in the beginning of Shmuel, that, except we have here now, that somehow, Vayom Hashem, God said that there's a famine for 3 years, Al Sha'ul, the Beit HaDamim, Al Asher Himit et HaGivonim, because he killed the Givonim. We have no recorded death of that. There's no story of when that happened. But that's what we have. We'll have to look at what's going on here. What are they talking about? But the story gets much worse. And rather than do it in English, I'm just going to read the whole thing now. We'll come back to it. So let's go over here to Bet Trekhoff Aleph, 14 Psukim. Yeah, it starts with Bahira Abimei David Shlosh Shanim, that there's a famine for 3 years, Shanash Archei Shanah. David at Pnei Hashem, and David sought God's answer. Yom Hashem El Shaul, the Beit Hamim, and God said, "It's because of Shaul and the house of blood. Asher he Allah Asher he meets et haGivonim, because he killed the Givonim." Vayikra Melech lo Givonim. The king called to the Givonim, Vayom Elohim, and spoke to them. And since Shmuel doesn't think you went back to Yeshua, they're going to summarize what's going on. Givonim, lo b'nei Yisrael, hema, Givonim were not part of the people of Israel. Ki miyeter Emori, they were from the last remnants of the Emori, which in Nach is the general term for the people who lived in Canaan, the Canaanim. B'nei Yisrael nishvu lahem, and B'nei Yisrael had sworn to them that they would be kept safe. Evakesh Shaul hakotam, but Shaul sought to attack them. Kano l'b'nei Yisrael b'yuda, in his jealousy over Israel and Yehuda. That's the backstory. So David now goes to the Givonim. Hashem said, it's because of the Givonim that the famine is happening. What can I do for you? How can I atone? And you will bless the inheritance of God. We need the rain again. God is punishing us because of you. And the Givonim said to David, and Leonard Kessler was a Havim Shaul Beito. We don't want money from Shaul and his house. And Leonard Ishla Mipi Israel. And we don't want to kill anybody in Israel. So David says, okay, what can we do? How can I make it up to you? Whatever this happened, that he killed the Givonim, we need to somehow get some kind of kapara here. So they're giving him say, Vayomru, Elamelech, so they tell the king, Ishasher ki lanu, this man who destroyed us, Asher dima lanu, and who really made us silent. Nishmadnu, who wiped us out, Ishasher b'chol gvul Yisrael, and prevented us from settling anywhere in the boundaries of Israel. Yitan lanu shivat Hashim bana, give us seven of his descendants. V'hukhanum l'Hashem, and we'll hang them for God, Yivat Sha'ul, on the hill of Sha'ul, Bechir Hashem, who is the beloved of God, the chosen one of God. Yomar HaMelech Aniyaten. And David says, I'll give them to you. Seven of Sha'ul's descendants. And hand them over to the Givanim. Echmol HaMelech Amapiboshet Ben Yonatan Ben Sha'ul. And David had pity on Mephibosheth, who's the son of Yonatan. We've seen him before. Shaul's grandson. Al Shivat Hashem Asher Ben Yonatan, because David had sworn to Yonatan to protect his descendants. There's an oath between Ben David and Ben Yonatan Ben Shaul. He's not going to hand over Mephibosheth. He can take any other descendants of Shaul he can find. The Kacha Melech Shtei Bnei Rizpah Baraya. And so the king took two of the children of Rizpah Baraya, who was Shaul's Pilegesh, his concubine, Asher Yaldala Shaul, who had been born to Shaul, at Armoniv at Mephibosheth, at the district of Mephibosheth, that's their names, the Chameshet B'nei Michal Bat Shaul, and five of the children of Michal. This gets worse, okay? This is not getting any better. This is, okay, Asher Yaldala Adriel Bar Bizilai, who were born to Adriel Bar Bizilai, not David. Figure this all out. We have no idea what any of these words mean anywhere in this puzzle. This whole story has to be worked out. By Bizilai HaMacholoti, so five of Michal's descendants. Again, these are descendants of Shaul. Michal is the daughter of Shaul. By name Biyad Givonim, and he gives them over to the Givonim. By Yoki'um Bahar Lefnei Hashem, and they hang them on the mountainside. God, by Yiplu Shivatam Yachad, and the all seven of them fell at once. Himahum Tubi make a tear, and they were killed in the days and the harvest days, Barishonim, Tchilat, Kitir Sarim, the beginning of the barley harvest, around Pesach time. Seven of Shaul's descendants are hanged. Adihach Ritzpah Bataya, Atasak, by Tateula El Atzur. Ritzpah, again, is the mother of two of them, is the Pilegesh of Shaul, took a sackcloth and placed it against the rock where they were. Mitzilat Katir, from the beginning of the harvest, Anitach Mayim Aleihem and Ashamayim, until the waters came down from the heavens in the rainy season, which would be Sukkot. So this is 6 months. He basically pitches a tent in front of these hanging bodies. So that's not Ofer Shamayim Lanuach Aleihem, and she would not let the birds rest on them, Yomam, during the day, V'chayata Sedat Laila, and the animals at night. So these seven are hanging there for 6 months, and she's protecting the bodies. By God of David, Asher Aspar Rizpah Batayah Pilegesh Sha'ul, and David was told after these 6 months what Rizpah had done. By Yerach David, by Kachet Atmot Sha'ul, V'atmot Yonatan Beno. So David goes, after hearing what Rizpah did, goes back and goes gets the bones of Sha'ul and Yonatan, who had died in battle with Plishtim however long before. And he took them, the eight Balei Yavesh Gilad, took them from Yavesh Gilad, which is a city on the east side of the Jordan. And we have to remember, this is the story of the last Perek of Shmuel Aleph, when Shaul died. His body was hanged, and Shaul's sons were hanged in Beit Shan by the Plishtim. And the people of Yavesh Gilad snuck in there, took the bodies down to bury them in Yavesh Gilad. Asher ganvu otam mirchov Beit Shan. The people of Yavesh Gilad had stolen them from the square in Beit Shan. Asher tulum sham of the shim, where they had been hung to display them by the plishtim. Yom ha'ko plishtim asher ul be'zavo, when the policeman killed Shaul in Gilboa. And so David takes the bones of Shaul and Yonatan, along with the bones, the bodies of those who had been hanged, those seven. And he brings them back to Eretz Binyamin, basically buried in their family plot, the Kever Kish Aviv, and the grave of Kish's father, Shaul's father. And then the king had done all this, and a God listened to, heard the prayers of the land after that, and the famine is over. That's the story.
Could you go over what Rizpah did? What did she do?
So we will have to do this in great detail. So, I mean, I had 14 psukim, and somehow I ended up with at least 5 hours to talk about all this.
Okay.
So Rizpah is basically these bodies are hanging there, okay, after they've been killed, and they're on display, and Rizpah is protecting them from being eaten by the animals until they can be buried.
But they're going to decompose in 6 months?
Yes, they're all going to decompose. Yes, they can decompose, and by the time it comes happen, you know, they're asmot hamukayim, they're just bones. They're left unburied. Okay? None of this is good.
No.
Okay, it's a terrible story. You could read this as David's Machiavellian plan, right? And these are the remnants of the house of Shaul. So this is a great excuse for David to just get rid of them all. Okay, he eliminated competition for the throne, and that's exactly how this is Shmuel Yavin, who was the first head of the Israeli Antiquities Authority, was one of the authors of something called the Encyclopedia Mikrait. It's basically a Tanakh encyclopedia, and that's the way he looked at the story. David Matzakan Shat Kosher. David found here an opportune moment, Lipater Mishridei Beit Shaul. To rid himself of the remnants of the house of Shaul. I mean, that's what you do, you come king, right? You get rid of all the competition. Efshar od hayu olim, that maybe they would still cause l'rakez to be vam, to incite around them, to n'ot meri v'meri, they would still incite some kind of rebellion. So this was David's chance. Get rid of them all. And if we remember the secret book of Kings, have you read that?
You told us about it.
I've talked about it a bunch of times worth reading, because it basically looks at David as exactly that kind of evil plotting king. And that's the way she tells this story, okay, that David is intentionally trying to manipulate things so that he can get rid of all the rest of the Beit Shaul. And in fact, one of my complaints about the Secret Book of Kings is that it doesn't give much time for this story. That she talks a lot about, sort of makes up more stories around there. But if you want to portray King David as a heartless monster, you couldn't do better than this parak here. But in her book, it's only 2 pages. I think she should put more there. But anyway, I don't think that's the way to read the story. That's not the way to read this parak, and we'll see why. I would read it as the story of David in the trolley, like a little kid book. You know what the trolley problem is? You heard of that?
Is that the one where you're supposed to take the iron back to your shalim?
No. The trolley problem is a thought experiment.
Okay.
An ethic. I wish Susie was here, because she had one of her law professors. One is always famous for giving this as an ethical problem. So basically, you're on the side of a trolley track. There's a lever. You can switch the trolley to a different branch of the track. The trolley's coming down, and there are 5 people tied to the track. They're going to be run over and killed. You can pull the lever, switch it to the other side, but there's one person tied to the other track. Now, what do you do? If you have some absolute, 5 people, one person, obviously, it's like the one person, but then you actually have to do something with your own hands. How do you make that kind of decision? I mean, there isn't a right answer there. Okay, and that's what David's here, right? He's got this. He's got a family, the drought for many years, and he's basically God has told them, okay, you've got to make this choice. You've got to make the Gibeonim happy. They want seven innocent people, seven innocent men. We have no reason to believe they were guilty of Lahamita the Gibeonim. That was Shaul. These are his grandchildren. How do you decide that?
Mm.
Now, there are wrong ways to do that. I like the XKCD, where it's talking about it, and then Mr. Black Hat asks, basically the question is, can I reach the lever without getting up? And I'm willing to save their lives as long as I don't have to actually like stand up to do it or do any work through there. And then ending it with, for a dollar, I promise to pull the lever if one of the five people is you. So that's the wrong moral approach, okay? Yes, you should try to save them, okay? I know, even if you have to stand up and pull the lever, right? How busy am I? That's the wrong approach. However, there isn't a right approach. Right? There isn't some right answer there. It's not an easy question. What do you do with that? So we're going to look at this parak through the eyes of Emmanuel Levinas, who I've mentioned before. French philosopher, lived through the Holocaust as basically the prisoner of war, and afterwards became principal of a Jewish high school. And he's quoted all the time by Joy Rosenfeld, so that makes him famous too. But he has a book called Nine Talmudic Readings that he basically picks a sugya in the Gemara and talks about it to a secular French audience. And this is from his introduction. That the first of four of these nine Talmudic readings were brought together in this volume represents a text of talks delivered between 1963 and 1966 at the Colloquia of Jewish Intellectuals. That sounds like a fascinating place to go. There's a lot of lectures with Jewish intellectuals at the French section of the World Jewish Congress organized in Paris every year since 1957.
Hmm.
Not sure if they still have it or not. I couldn't find any evidence of that. I know it went through the 70s at least. But think about this is France in the 50s and 60s. It's very much focused on recovering from the Holocaust and their response to that, how the French Jews respond to that. But his lecture every year in this was specifically about a Talmudic issue. Like most of the other ones were not particularly religious. It's dealing with more secular Jewish subjects, the Jewish community in France. He wants to talk about the Gemara. He wants to talk Talmud. And he has this interesting point. It is certain that when discussing the right to eat or not eat an egg hatched on a holy day, first mission in Beitza, or payments owed for damages caused by a wild ox, this is mission in Bamitzia, the sages of the Talmud are discussing neither an egg nor an ox. That's not really what they're talking about, but are arguing about fundamental ideas without appearing to do so. Yes, you can learn the details of the halakha there, but there are deeper philosophical ideas there. It's true that one needs to encounter an authentic Talmudic master to be sure of it. You need to learn from a Rebbe, basically. You can't just read it yourself. And so Levinas was a philosopher who was looking mostly at ethical responsibilities to others. He always capitalized the other. And the idea that one of my famous books is called Totality and Infinity, that we can't know somebody else as a totality. We don't know what other people are thinking or feeling, what they need. Everyone else is infinite from our point of view. They cannot be fully known, and we still need to respect that. And what's interesting about him is he learned from a mysterious, authentic Talmudic master that's only known as Mansur Shushani, nickname of an otherwise anonymous, enigmatic Jewish teacher who had students in the land of Israel, South America, Europe, and elsewhere. And his most famous students were Emmanuel Levinas and Elie Wiesel. We've learned Gemara from this Mansur Shushani. You have some of his writings, we don't know who he is, but everyone was really smart. So we're going to look at what Levinas says about this story through the eyes of the Gemara that he's going to bring. But first, we have to look at the story itself. When did it happen? Starts out saying, it takes place b'nei David, some point in the time of David. It's not acharei chen, it's not after the previous stories. Like we say, it's not within the chronological sequence of the whole book of Shmuel here. it looks like the beginning of all the other kind of short historical books. Beirut, Vayhi Bimei Shura Shiptin, or Bimei Achashverosh. It's in this time that this happened. But really, this paragraph, these 14 psukim are its own little book that get merged into the rest of Sefer Shmuel. So we don't have a hint, doesn't say when it takes place. And that kind of will matter, and we'll have to look at why. The Seder Olam.
Well, one thing Michal's, these are all Michal's kids, so we know when that happened. And
right, we don't know when she would have had those kids. And we'll talk about the fact that they weren't her kids either. It makes it very confusing.
Right, because she was not to have kids, right? She was cursed.
Right,
yeah. Right.
Then I heard it was not that she couldn't have any kids. You couldn't have kids with David.
Right. I will say right now that part of the problem is where it's Amesha b'nei Michal bat Shaul asher yalda la'Adriel bar Barzilai amachloti. Adriel bar Barzilai was Merav's husband.
Oh.
Okay, right. That's her. Adriel is her brother. Is her brother-in-law, not her husband.
Oh.
We're going to talk about that. And when we get to that, the Gemara says that they were basically adopted, really Merav's children. That might hint. Right. So it's got to be after he knows. It's got to be after he knows Michal, right? He made David. When is that? And so the Seder Elam takes it all the whole book chronologically. But this is occurring at the very end of David's life. Okay, that after the whole rebellion with Absalom, we have that story, and this occurs somehow at the end of that. But then it's hard to understand why. Mm-hmm. If this is Shaul killed the Gibbonim, why is Hashem giving a famine 30 plus years later to David and to Israel then? So if you're listening to Rabbi Shulman's shiurim, he assumes that this story takes place at the time of Shmuel Bet Perek Gimel, right at the beginning of David's reign in Yehuda, right after Shaul dies. So this is really, this family really is a response to Shaul's error. We still need to explain then why Bnei Israel is being present in the time of David, not in the time of Shaul, but at least it's chronologically close together. And that opinion, that this actually occurred way early, is the opinion of Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, one of the Midrashim, where it says, right, Pinchas Omer, to Achrei Shana Shenerag Shaul, the year after Shaul was killed, Shaul Banav, Bara Abme David Shoshashanim, that this famine happened the year after Shaul was killed. So before, when David is just king in Yehuda, way back in the beginning of his reign. And that's the Veira being made by David, right when David becomes killed. It's not clear, because Abarbanel, who thinks that this whole Ra'av takes place at the end of David's life, quotes the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, who has a completely different text. He has the same Amar Pinchas, Lachar Shloshim Shana, not after one year, but after 30 years.
Huh.
Okay, so somewhere in there, that covers all of David's reign. So after 30 years, after Shaul was killed, that's his text. So that's not terribly helpful. Looking for some kind of internal evidence when it took place, it certainly is arguable that it took place before Absalom's rebellion. Because we have this incident during that rebellion, when David is running away from Yerushalayim. He's cursed by someone named Shimon ben Gera. Here's that story. This is from Perek Zayin. Uva Melech David ad Bukhurim. David's running away from Yerushalayim, comes to see Bukhurim, which is east of Yerushalayim. Mei Misham Ish Yotze, and from there a man came out, Mishpachat Beit Shaul, who was one of Shaul's family, his cousin, Ushmo Shimi ben Gera. His name is Shim'i ben Gera. Yetzo Yetzei McClellan. He was going out following all of David's ragtag band as they're running away from Yerushalayim and cursing them. He was throwing rocks at them against David and all of his servants and all of David's soldiers, left and right. He's throwing rocks at them and cursing them. And this is what Shimi said as he's cursing them. Come on out, you man of blood. You worthless man. God is paying you back for the blood of the house of Shaul. Asher malachta tachtav, that you reigned in his place. And now God's given that kingship to Avshalom, your son. You are sitting there wallowing in your own evil. You're a man of blood. And so David's men want to go kill him, and David says, don't do it. David and David tells Abishai, his nephew, one of like, Yoav's brother, he's going to go kill him right now. And to all his servants, look, my own son, my flesh and blood, the vocation of she is trying to kill me. And now I've got this Benjaminite here yelling at me. God's will. Maybe God will see my suffering. Hashem li tova tahe klatoyim, but then Hashem will pay me back. And it will work out for the best.
David, you're on, we don't hear you, Daniel. Danny. Wait, I don't hear you.
I am having trouble hearing too.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Now we do.
I do, but it's sort of fading in and out.
I'm on the phone.
Talk.
Is that better? Can you hear me?
Well, you have to talk so we know.
Can you?
It's in and out.
Yeah.
Really?
In and out. I can hear Phyllis much more clearly.
That's weird. Okay. Let me see. My phone call.
Okay. It's a little better.
That's computer audio.
You can hear Danny? I don't know if
she can even
hear me. No. Now Ruthie can't hear you either.
Is this any better?
Yes.
I could hear you before.
I don't know.
Now I just heard you say, I don't know.
Is this working here?
Yes.
Okay, hopefully this will work.
Yes.
Okay. So we have Shimi Ben, we heard the part about Shimi Ben Gera. He's cursing David.
Yeah.
He's telling him that you're being paid back for the Damim of Beit Shaul. Question is, when is David guilty for killing Beit Shaul? He wasn't responsible. Shaul dies, he has the plishtim. His sons die, they have plishtim. Ishbosheth, his son, is killed by his own men, and David very publicly has the assassins executed. He doesn't want to kill Shaul. Okay, the only place where we see that David is responsible for the May Beit Shaul is in this story here that we just quoted, where he gives Shaul's descendants to the Gihonim. It makes sense that that's what Shimi is telling him, that you're being paid back for what happens here.
Oh.
It makes sense to say that at least this story of the Avshalom, some point before then. That's about all you can say about
Wendy. So it shows you that it's out of order.
Right. So I had an opinion about the chronology here. Rav Shlosh Shanim. When we looked at Shmuel Ben Berkat, that was...
No, you're fading out. No sound.
Fade it out, Danny. Still staticky.
I can hear you just fine. Let me... Now let me see if I can get off the back of computer audio. Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
It's definitely out.
Danny, man, maybe if we mute ourselves, then we can hear you better. Should we try that?
There's my microphone. That's a new problem.
That didn't work. Nice idea, but didn't.
Is it try without the phone? Is it better without the phone?
No, now we don't hear you at all.
Okay, Danny, we'll wait for you to come back.
Should we all go out and come back?
No. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
You can hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's better. Now I'm on the computer audio.
Yeah, I think that's better.
Okay, that was always giving me a problem before. Well, I'm willing to try this. Let me try to get my volume up. Anyone want to take up a collection to get me a professional microphone or a whole recording studio? That would be great. Okay, so we're talking about when is this story happening? And my opinion is that it's connected to Perek Chet and Tet. And we'll have to look at those and what's going on there. Perek Chet is the story of David's wars, the Milchama Rashut, when he expands his empire, attacks the Plishtim.
I was going to say that.
Yes.
About it, that it was something related to his war.
Yep, that's where we're going to connect it to. So we're going to look at that. And this is based on a shir by, what's his name? Common survives the kolel here.
I don't hear anything now. Do you guys?
There, you hear it? Great.
We have that ticking sound in between.
Okay, which is why we do the phone here. Okay. Switch the phone audio.
Welcome to Zoom. Enter your... Enter your part. You are in the meeting now. There are 3 participants in the meeting. This meeting is being recorded.
You hear anything?
Yes.
Is it better?
Maybe.
Okay, it's almost 10 o'clock anyway. Let's do a little bit now and aim for hopefully do better next week. So, looking back at the original.
Are we still going to keep the same time then?
At least for right now, because I'm working every Sunday during the day.
Oh, okay.
So 9 a.m., I'm at the hospital.
Gotcha. No, I just was wondering.
Okay. So we go back and look at the first pasuk. The first pasuk by Hira Abimei David, Shloshanim. There's a famine days of David for 3 years, Shana Achrei Shana, 1 year after the next, by the case David Apnei Hashem. And Hashem and David seeks literally the face of God, the counsel of God, an answer from God. And then there's a paragraph break right in the middle of the pasuk. Okay, there's a little samach there. That's a paragraph break in the text. And then Vayom Hashem El Shaul Vel Beit HaDamin, Al Shem Mita Givonim. And the answer comes eventually. There's a gap there. But David has not been just waiting 3 years and figuring and just living through a famine. He's trying this whole time. What's going on? And so, Gemara and Yevamot.
Was this when he was like having these wars that were voluntary to collect money to build the Beit HaMikdash? And then there was famine and he wouldn't give the food to the people because he was so obsessed with building the Beit HaMikdash?
Yes, that's exactly where we're going with this.
Okay.
That is exactly the, so you know, you remember this from 3 years ago?
Yeah.
You knew this already. I'm glad you're paying attention. Okay.
It had
That's where we're going.
A big impression on me.
Okay. So looking at the Gemara puts all this together. I have a kish, David, Pnei Hashem, Maihi, what does that mean? Amar Reish Lakish, Shasha'al, Be'urim, Betumim. Right, he asked the room to me. He doesn't have a message from God. As a Navi said, God didn't tell a Navi, go do this. God's not telling him what to do. He's asking. And the thing about the Urim Batumim, whenever they're mentioned, is that they are oracular. They don't give you a straight answer. And we see that here, right? This whole, well, it's Al Sha'ul Val Beit HaDamim, not telling what's going on. We have examples of that in the end of Shoftim, Plegas Begiva, when Israel go to war against Binyamin. And they ask, who should go to war first? And the Urim Tum say, Yehuda. Yom HaShem, Yehuda Batchila. And it's, Yehuda should go first. And so Yehuda goes attack, and they're wiped out.
Mm.
Okay? Urim Tum say, yeah, I didn't say you should go to war, but if you're going to war, Yehuda should go first. Hashem doesn't want you to, you're not looking for magical answers. You're supposed to figure this out yourself. This isn't an instant answer. Or another example, this is a suggestion of the Gra by Chana. Chana is praying for a child, speaking of Shmuel.
Mm-hmm.
He goes and davens in the Mishkan. And Eliyahu, the Kohen Gadol, says, you can't pray here. It's a Mishkan. You're supposed to bring a sacrifice, right? It's all about Karbonot. And he thinks that she's drunk. They suggest that, he asks that, the Gra suggests that Eli asked the Urim Batumim what's going on with this woman. And he gets the letters that's supposed to spell out Kshera, that she's right, or Kesara, that she's like Sarah, she's barren and she's praying for a child. But he puts it together and says, no, she Kora, drunk.
Oh.
That, asking the Urim Batumim for an answer doesn't give you a straight answer.
Hmm.
So that Gemara says that this, what's going on here, these 3 years, it was part of process. That's what that paragraph break in the middle of Pasuk is. That there's for 3 years, David's trying to find an answer. What's going on? Why is there this famine? And David, this is Tanakh. There must be a reason. Something, we must be doing something wrong and being punished for. But the Gemara continues. Vayira Abi Me David Shalosh Shanim Shana Achmar Shana. There was a famine in the time of David for 3 years, 1 year after the next. Benari Shana Amar Lahem. The first year, David says to the people, Shema Ovde Avodah Zarah Yishbakechem. Maybe we've got too much Avodah Zarah going on in the nation. But it says explicitly, we say it in Shema every day. You're going to serve other gods, and you're going to bow down to them. God be angry, but Tzar Tishmayim will close up, will stop up the sky. There'll be no rain. Must be an Avodah Zarah problem. So, Badku, search Lomatsu. They didn't find anybody. They had a whole anti-Avodah Zarah campaign. They didn't have a problem, and still the famine continued. Yeah, the sixth year comes. Amar Lahem, David tells them, maybe the aver in the sense of gilui arayot. There's sexual immorality going on. See, of course, we have another pasuk here in Yirmiyahu that yimanu revivim, that the early rain stopped, malkosh lo haya, and there was no, the late rains didn't happen. Metach isha zanah, like the stubbornness of a wanton woman. Isha zanah somehow connected to manu revidim, the rains don't happen.
Mm-hmm.
B, badku lo matzo. They looked, that was not a problem in Israel at the time. You see, the third year came, there's still another drought. Amar Lahem, David says to them, maybe there are people who are pledging tzedakah in public, very loudly and publicly, but they don't give. They make their promises but aren't giving tzedakah. We have another pasuk from Mishle that's a bad thing, and it's connected to the rain. There's no clouds, no wind, no rain. Because people are praising themselves with gifts of lies. They're lying about what they're giving. They're not giving tzedakah when they say they are. But Kuv Lamatzo said, nope, they looked, that wasn't a problem. Mara, so that, then at the end of 3 years, David says, Eya davar toloi elabi. David says, must be something wrong with me. What am I doing that's wrong? And then he gets the answer, El Sha'ul vel beit ha-demim, al shemita de givonim. What does that mean? And I'd say at this point, it is almost 10 o'clock. I'm going to stop here. Continue next week.
Okay.
Hey, hopefully
my sound will be better.
Danny, I'm willing to donate some money to Young Israel and they can reimburse you to improve your computer sound. Seriously.
I don't know what to do. I mean, it was working. I'm not sure what I need.
How much does a thing like that cost? Like $100 or more?
Has no idea.
I don't think it's that expensive.
Decent mic and the headphones. I don't know. What do people use? Anyone else do a podcast?
I mean, you didn't have problems before. That's what's interesting.
If I had problems before, I went to the phone. Now it's the phone that's acting up.
But now it's good. Less 5-10 minutes.
Okay, so maybe just, if this works, I can keep doing this.
But Danny, okay, look into a possible solution. I'm willing to donate some money.